It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Final hour of the program here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you until 6 o'clock. Three down, one to go. Our buddy Caleb Johnson will join you then. And I chatted with him earlier in the show about U.S. Basketball, men's and women's. Both are in very good shape right now. But I just want to see people stop caring about how many minutes dudes play. Like, really? They're winning the game? You really care that Joel Embiid only got 2 minutes here or Jason Tatum only got so many minutes here? I'm sorry, man. I just think that there are many, 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 many more important things to worry about when it comes to the state of the U.S. men's Olympic basketball team. And most importantly, again, are they winning? And you know what? Not only are they winning, they're in first place total-wise because they keep a point differential and they're winning by a wide margin. So don't worry. If you're a Jason Tatum fan or you're a Tyrese Halliburton fan or you're a Derek White fan, I'm sorry, but the main point of the Olympics is not to distribute minutes equally by Steve Kerr. It's to win the game. But, you know, I guess some people feel like it's got to be equal opportunity. I don't know why, but I guess that's the theme this year at least. I don't remember this really ever being a thing before. But right now I want to get into something a little fun because we know right now we are in the thick of it. And in the thick of it, I mean it is list season, meaning every outlet, CBS, ESPN, you name it, NFL Network, they put out lists. The top, E, what was the list you were referencing before? The top 100 players in the NFL?
Yeah, NFL top 100.
Yeah, and Tyreek Hill beat out Patrick Mahomes for number one, which, I mean, again, tell me you're just trying to get clickbait without telling me you're just trying to get clickbait. But they win because I just mentioned it, and we mentioned it already numerous times on the show. So there's another list that was put out by ESPN. And this list is the top quarterbacks of the 2000s. Now, there's 80 quarterbacks on this list. I'll give you a couple of highlights as we go through it, but obviously I can't read all of them. But I will give you the top five in order. Number five is Joe Burrow. Number four is Tim Tebow. Number three, Vince Young. Number two is Cam. And number one is Baker Mayfield. Now, E, I'll ask you first. Do you have any problems with the top five or the order?
I have several problems with it.
So do I. Okay, good. So what are your issues with the top five? Let's start there.
I do not think that guys who have one great year, a la Joe Burrow, make them the, you know, best quarterbacks of the decade or whatever it was.
Since the 2000s.
Since the 2000s. You know, he had one outstanding, magnificent year at LSU versus a guy who has three or four great career. For example, how is Andrew Luck so far down on that list? Andrew Luck was arguably the greatest quarterback in college of that era.
He came in at 18.
Right, and he had three great years and went on to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. I ain't worried about what he did in the pros. This is a college ranking. And I'll give you an example. Number two, did he have one of the greatest college seasons of all time? Yes, but it was 1 year. So, no, I'm this top five, I could pick a few holes in it.
You know what's really funny?
I literally completely disagree with you. I think Joe Burrow should be number one. He had the greatest college football season I've ever seen.
But it's 1 year.
And they won a championship.
1 year.
But he did everything. They won the title. He broke records with stats. And he was, I mean, that's a perfect season. He was absolutely incredible.
So you take his 1 year, yes, they won it, over Andrew Luck's three great years of All-American play.
Yeah, I would. I just would. Andrew Luck didn't do what Joe Burrow did. He just didn't do it. The stats.
Because he didn't win one, yes, one game. He had 3 years of all pro, everything, and was the number one pick in the draft, just like Joe Burrow.
Yeah. I would argue Andrew Luck could be higher than 18.
Oh, he's got to be higher than 18. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. All right, so Cam's one great year at Auburn, 15-0, Heisman Trophy, national championship. Makes him the second best quarterback in college in that era?
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the way you're asking the question as if like it's a shock that that's the answer, right? I don't know. Let me know. Call in 404-726-0929. We got an hour left. Me and E, we didn't rehearse this. We're doing this live on the air. That's how we do it. I sent in this list middle of the week. I said, I want you to react to this with me.
And when I looked at it, I was like,
And we have complete opposite reactions. Okay, who do you agree with? E, that it should be based on the entire body of work, multiple years, even if they didn't win a championship, like Andrew Luck. Or should it be like Cam Newton and Joe Burrow, who had one record-breaking, incredible year that puts you at the top of this list? Which one is it? 404-726-0929. Tweet me at C Thomas Radio. That's also the text line. And call in. As we're going through this, if you have an opinion, E will take your calls.
What about number 11?
404-726-0929. All right, number 11. Let me pull the list back up here. Number 11 is Trevor Lawrence.
Same criteria. One an Addy. 3 years of All-American football. Number one pick in the NFL draft.
Didn't win a Heisman.
True. Didn't win a Heisman. Won the Natty. All-American. Number one pick in the NFL draft. Did it for 3 years. For 3 years.
I will say this. He should be above the two guys that are ahead of him, which are Robert RG3. Griffin III and Lamar Jackson.
Well, Jackson. And Marcus Mariota.
And Marcus. Oh, Marcus Mariota. Yeah. Right, so 8 Lamar Jackson, 9 Marcus Mariota, 10 Robert Griffin III. Lawrence should be above all three of those.
Thank you. And I don't put winning the Heisman because it's one of the most overrated awards in sports. We all know that.
Well, it's just who's the best quarterback that year. That's what the Heisman.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and how he didn't win it, I don't know. Because they didn't want to, I mean, because he's a freshman, I don't know. Maybe I would like to go back and look at the voting, who was against those years. But those 3 years he had at Clemson, if Deshaun Watson doesn't beat him that one time, he gets two natties. All-American every year, number one pick in the draft. How he's number 11, and like you said, under a couple of guys you just named, come on. Come on.
Couple of ones I want to point out before we run out of time. Stetson Bennett's number 41. He's got two national championships.
Two. One undefeated season, one season with one loss.
So they're basically saying because he didn't put up monster stats that he doesn't deserve to be in the top half of the list.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? How many quarterbacks on this list have multiple national championships? Is it just Tebow?
And him?
That's it, right?
Yeah, just
that's
Tebow
it.
And him.
And Tebow's number what, 4?
Yeah.
So you're telling me Stetson Bennett's 47 and Tebow's 4? And they both have multiple national championships and they're the only ones on this list that have that? Come on.
The list is flawed. The list is very flawed.
Come on, man.
The list is very flawed.
Let's point out the other dogs that made it. We have Aaron Murray at 47. You're telling me Aaron Murray's only 6 spots better than Stetson Bennett? Come on, man. I love Aaron Murray. He comes on the show all the time, and he's a DGD. But seriously? No.
Yeah,
and then
flawless.
The only other dog on the list is David Green at 73. Did they leave anyone out? That was a dog.
No. That's the Bulldogs of the last 20 years. And what David Green did in college, did he win a natty? No. But remember, when David Green left the University of Georgia, he was the all-time winningest QB in college football history, something like that, most wins. And I think he had the most yardage in SEC history at the time. His stats were amazing. And Georgia had a four-year run of 12 wins a game or 11 wins a game and all that great stuff. It should be a lot. They need to show us the criteria of how they judge this because, you know, and once again, Vince Young had a really good, and he's number two on the list. Vince Young, number three on the list. I'd put Vince above Cam because of the one-game performance that he had over USC.
I'd have to compare their stats.
Okay.
I think Cam probably gets him on the numbers.
All right, and we missed it. Matt Leinart has multiple national championships.
No.
Yeah.
They lost. They won one, and then they lost to Texas. No, he doesn't.
Okay. All right. You're right.
But one omission, is Matt Stafford not on this list?
Looks that way.
He qualifies, right? I was thinking, like, did he start?
Well, yeah, 2000. He was the number one pick in 2009 draft.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm like, he didn't play in, it wasn't 1999, it was 2000. Yeah, so Matt Stafford is not one of the 80 best quarterbacks of the last.
And he was started as a true freshman, number one pick in the NFL draft.
Man, I mean, all right.
He ain't worth the paper it's printed on.
Matt Ryan comes in, he just squeaks in at number 79. He had a really good college career, and he played with nobody. Who was his – I mean, was Luke Kuechly on the team? I mean, is that –
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was on the defense. Yeah.
Is that the only player that he played with? I mean
this is not good.
Matt Ryan had a – Teddy Bridgewater had a better college career than Matt Ryan?
Okay, well, I'll give you a better name than that. Colin Kaepernick had a better college career than Aaron Rodgers. And Patrick Mahomes.
Now, I'm not going to lie and say I know Colin Kaepernick's college numbers.
I do. I watched him in college.
Okay.
Okay? They were average.
Okay.
He was a crazy athlete with a big arm, but his college numbers were average. And I'll give you a name if you really want to talk guys who had remarkable college careers, a name that should be a lot higher on his list, Eric Crouch.
Yeah. You're right.
Number 49.
You're right.
He did win the Heisman. Did he win the Natty at Nebraska? I'm not sure, but his college football career, unbelievable. And he's the 49th best guy on this list for the year, the 2000s. Insane.
They have Rex Grossman at number 34.
Above Eric Crouch. Above Eric Crouch. Above a Heisman winner. 1 year, probably to run up the year after that. Took his team to the national championship game at least once or twice. Yeah, I'm done. You about to give me
JT Barrett comes in at 70. I think that's really low for him. He was incredible at Ohio State. My man Pat White. I love Pat White, but he's not the 30th best college quarterback of the 2000s, man.
No.
Him and Steve Slayton at West Virginia, come on, that was electric.
Old lefty Pat White. Yeah,
I love me some Pat White. And he is not 30 on this list.
And Bo Nix is not 28.
No. Well, Bo Nix had
recent, that's recency bias.
No, but he had like 50 touchdowns last year.
One good year. Are they not counting his Auburn years when he struggled and was a turnover machine?
Yeah, I guess
he was a turnover. That's why they ran him out of the SEC because he was a turnover machine. You get him in the Pac-12, whatever it is. Put him in a spread offense of Oregon. He put up big numbers, but in a real teams, real league with real defenses, he struggled.
Chase Daniels, number 39. He was good at Missouri.
He was.
Come on. 39?
Ahead of Aaron Murray.
And Stetson Bennett.
Ahead of Colt Brennan at Hawaii put up numbers that were unmatched at the time.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace. I mean, it's tough. This is tough.
Yeah, all right. So that's why I wanted to do this exercise, man, because I knew we would be picking this thing apart. And we did. Rightfully so, starting with the top five.
And finally, we didn't agree on some stuff today.
Yeah, exactly. And we started with the top five and made our way down. All right, next up, we're bringing in our buddy Craig Mish. He covers all things Miami. We got Falcons going to the Dolphins. We got their new contracts. And then we got the Marlins. So everything seems to work out in synergy. We'll bring in our buddy Craig Mish next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you till the top of the hour, taking you until 6 p.m. Caleb Johnson comes your way then. Miami and Atlanta intersecting in a bunch of different ways right now, so I wanted to get the perspective of one of the best down there. That is our buddy Craig Mish. You can read him in the Miami Herald, Sports Grid TV. You can watch him there, and MLB Network as well. Craig, appreciate the time.
Sure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. On the WadeFord.com hotline is Craig Mish. All right, let's start with the Marlins because they are in the middle of a series with the Braves. Explain to me what happened over the last couple of years. They were a playoff team, looked like they had some real pieces. Then injuries took place, and then we just witnessed yet another Marlins fire sale. Why?
Well, you know, Chris, I think that internally when they looked at it, they sort of evaluated the end of the season and decided at least that they just didn't feel like what they saw last year was going to be sustainable. So after doing that deep dive and kind of, you know, looking at how they got to the playoffs and why they got to the playoffs and, you know, how it kind of got to, you know, them to be there by making these trades and, you know, figuring things out halfway through the season, they wanted to try to do things a different way. And part of that is making sure they're hitting on free agents, which they haven't done over the last few years. And the other part is to draft and develop players that are going to play at the big league level. And, you know, inevitably, I mean, dialing it all the way back, they, you know, spoke to Kim Ng, the GM, about that and said, hey, look, we're going to bring in someone who is going to handle some of those things. You're going to be the GM of the team, and we're going to bring in a president to handle the overall operations. And she said no. And so Peter Bendix then was hired, took over, brought in his own people, and Chris decided that, hey, maybe this squad, minus Soler, can compete this year. Let's go ahead and take a look at it and see how we do. Unfortunately, Yuri Perez got hurt very early on, and the results early on in the season just didn't look good. The Tim Anderson signing initially didn't look good. And, you know, when they traded Arias, I think that that was kind of the white flag, so to speak, to say, hey, look, we may have overestimated how good we thought we would be, and now it's time to do things a different way.
Is the franchise in danger of maybe even a relocation or a re-identification of the franchise? Because how many years can you continue to sputter and before something drastic needs to be done, maybe even by the league itself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I guess it's a fair assessment to be on the outside looking in, thinking that there's a chance of that. But they have a long lease with the city of Miami. The owner has no intention of selling. And on top of it, Chris, you know, Major League Baseball has no issue with the Marlins. I mean, they're letting the Oakland A's tear down to the stubs here, move to Sacramento for a couple of years, and then go to Vegas. So what does that tell you? So no issues at all with what the Marlins are doing. Chris, their payroll was $100 million last year, or close to it. It's just they didn't win. They want to try to do things a different way, and this is the result.
Yeah, when you look at it, there's a couple of names in the lineup you recognize, a Gordon here, a Berger there. What prospects, though, other than those guys that we don't really have familiar faces with, can Braves fans look at and say, that might be somebody that we could see for years to come?
Yeah, I don't know that there's anybody on the Major League team right now outside of the player they just traded for that's been playing, Kyle Stowers, who they got from Baltimore in the trade where they sent Trevor Rogers, the pitcher, over there this past week. But beyond that, a lot of the players are going to be in the minor leagues right now. They acquired another player by the name of Connor Norby, who was on the Orioles, came up, and then went back down. He's working on second base and third base. I think the Braves fans will see him at some point, either later this year or next year. They also traded for De Los Santos, a player that's hit a ton of home runs at the minor league level, from the Arizona Diamondbacks for A.J. Puck. And then they got several players from the Padres, who I don't think you'll see initially, but I think you'll see at some point next year. So, you know, for Miami, I'm sure that if you look at it with them getting Sandy Alcantara back and Yuri Perez back and arguably some better performances, I think that the team will be better next year than they are this year because they're on pace to lose over 100 games. But, I don't think the Marlins are delusional in thinking they're going to win like 90 games or anything like that next year. It's probably going to be another a similar year, but I, you know, probably some improvement would be a guess.
Any chance we see Alcantara moved in the offseason as a high upsell sale?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about what moves this team could make to potentially get them back into a contention. And obviously he's a guy that we know when he's on, he could be one of the best pitchers in baseball, but we don't know, you know, when you come back from a long-term injury, it's always a crapshoot in terms of what type of pitcher you're going to get back. As we're talking with Craig Mish, he is a Miami insider extraordinaire covering baseball and all things Miami sports and nationally on Sports Grid as well. All right, I did want to hit on some things Miami Dolphins related as well, because the Falcons are going down to Miami this week for a practice and then a actual preseason game on Friday. The defense specifically, as you look at the team, I know they have a bunch of guys that are coming off serious injuries. Do you feel like it'll be enough to stop what, for the first time in forever, Craig, looks like a potent Atlanta offense?
I mean, in the preseason, I have no idea. But in the regular season, I think the Dolphins think they're better on defense than they were a year ago. They had a lot of injuries over the course of the defensive line, the defensive backfield. You know, they had a lot of quick strike offensive plays to Tyreek Hill, which, you know, obviously doesn't give the defense a chance to recover. But in the end, I don't know if it's going to be significant enough for them to be, let's say, a 12-13 win team or anything like that. But I do think that their offense is going to carry the load once again like it did last year. Look, I know that what the Falcons did in the offseason was remarkable, adding the quarterback with an S, I guess, right? Adding two quarterbacks.
Yep.
But really, you know, I don't know if you're asking me about this week, but I mean, come on, Chris, NFL preseason, man, like this.
Well, listen, Craig, you know, here's the thing, my friend. The Falcons Nation, we are looking for anything right now, anything we can grab our hat onto. So if, you know, if the defense is able to stop Tyreek Hill for a play or two here, stop Waddle a play or two there, if Kirk can get a deep ball to Drake London over the head of one of the corner. I mean, we, after the last 6 years of not making the playoffs, after the collapse in 2016, you know, you get to a point where you're looking for any morsel you can get, and that includes preseason practices.
No, yeah. Oh, in the practices. Oh, yeah. No, the practices. I thought you meant the game. Yeah. I mean, listen, the practices could be a different story, but all those names that you mentioned, even on the Atlanta side, I'd be hard pressed to think that any of them are going to play in any preseason game, especially right out of the gate. They just started practicing a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see with how the practices go. Like, those things are also sort of hard to gauge. But the telling tale for week one of the NFL preseason is obviously to look at the totals, the betting totals. And the Hall of Fame game was, I think, 30. And I think most of the games this week that I looked at, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, are in the very low 30s. So that's a total of 5 touchdowns, which is far from normal in a National Football League game. And I just don't think the way that the NFL has constructed itself right now, they've made the preseason so meaningless, I think they're willing to do away with another game to add Week 18.
No, I think you're right. I think it'll be down to 2 or 1, or maybe they'll just say screw it and have these scrimmages as the entire preseason altogether, as we're talking with Craig Mish here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, philosophically speaking, for the Dolphins, they put a ton of money into their quote-unquote Big 3. Do you feel like that could jeopardize the roster long-term in terms of other pieces?
You know, it's a good question, Chris, but I would ask you this. Like, if you ask that question about every other quarterback in the history of the NFL, we always have the answer. The answer is it never does. The National Football League is making so much money. It's a salary cap league. When Brock Osweiler was signed and cut, they said they would never be able to do that, and they did it. When Russell Wilson was a complete bust, they said they would never be able to dump him. And the Broncos, I think, are going to field a team and play 17 games this year. So I just don't buy all that stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, if Tua in 2-3 years isn't what they thought he was, yeah, they'll eat some dead money and they'll have a new quarterback. It's just very overstated where you hear these teams are in cap trouble. I mean, Chris, they always find a way to have a team and play the season, and you never hear anything about it ever again. I think it's like more fabrication to me than anything else. We can all look at it and worry about it, but during week four of an NFL season, are we ever talking about a team's cap trouble? Never.
No, and it's funny because in our own division, the Falcons rival the Saints, they have become the masters at manipulating the cap, because the number comes out every year that the Saints are, you know, $100 million over the cap, and yet they're signing big name free trade. They're getting guys to come in for the defensive end, and they're paying them a $75 million contract with $50 million guaranteed, and you're like, how are they doing this when they're $100 million over the cap? So we've gotten used to seeing that in year in and year out. Now, in terms of Tua, what is the perception from home base there in Miami? What do the fans feel about him, and how do they feel about him getting the money?
Well, look, the fans, or any fan that is a fan of their team, generally speaking, is going to think that they're the best thing since anything, you know? So everybody loves Tua here. And it's like there's like sort of this complex from the Dolphin fan. They get bothered a lot when the national media talks about him in a certain way on some of these shows. I never understood that infatuation either, but I guess that's like a thing. I don't think that the fans are delusional in thinking that he is one of the top five best quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think that's the case, even though he's paid the highest or second or third, whatever that is. But at the same time, I think it's very feasible that fans accept and understand that he's a top-end quarterback in the league, top 15, somewhere along those lines. And, Chris, that's good enough in this day and age of the NFL. There are not 30 good quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think there are 20. And I think Tua is above that mark. And I think the fans get that and accept that. And if he was a free agent, you and I both know that he would make more than $40 million a year, because the team that has the 28th best quarterback is going to go, wow, here's our shot. Just like Tannehill, just like Cousins, we've seen this before. So I think what we've reached is this day and age where it's not as good. It doesn't really matter how good you are as a quarterback. It matters when you're a free agent and the opportunity presents itself. And Tua's situation in a year or two presented itself in a way that some team would have, without a doubt, pulled the trigger on him to make him one of the highest or the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. Dolphins had to get ahead of that.
All right, before I let you go, I think most people, an average sports fan, would say that the AFC East is a two-horse race between the Dolphins and the Jets, with the Bills being a huge wild card who could potentially win the division or finish third or fourth, and then the Patriots are in rebuild mode. How do you view the AFC East? Where do you put the Dolphins?
So I did a show this morning on my network on Sports Grid, and maybe, Chris, you'd be surprised to know that the Jets and Bills are pretty much neck and neck favorites to win the division.
Hmm.
Would that surprise you to hear?
No, I mean,
it surprises me too. Surprises me too. But a lot of people feel that with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and the defense, which is better than any other team in the division, even New England, has a chance to carry them there. Now, I don't see it that way. I think Rodgers goes, on a team that won seven games and makes them a 9-win team, maybe. So I personally don't see it, but the odds makers seem to, and I never want to discount that. So I think that the Bills will take a little bit of a step back unless they're able to acquire a receiver at some point. So maybe this is the kind of division that's a little mixed up at the halfway point of the season. One team makes a trade and gets somebody. But other than that, I think it comes right down to the end. I think there's a good chance two teams make the playoffs, but I don't see three.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I just would have thought those two would have been the Dolphins and the Jets, not the Bills or any way, shape, or form. All right, appreciate the time as always, Craig. Make sure you check him out, as he just mentioned, Sports Grid, MLB Network, and Miami Herald as well. Appreciate the time.
Sure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Craig Mish there giving us the dip and the dish on all things Miami and Atlanta, with the Marlins playing the Braves, with the Falcons going down to Miami for practices this week. And then, of course, we got the news today that Tyreek Hill got his new deal. I don't know, man. I know Craig said that it's NBD, nothing to see here in terms of investing that much money in two wide receivers and a quarterback. It's a lot of cash. That's a lot of salary cap spot, man.
It's the bottom line to me is this. They got to be the Rams. They got to win it all. If they want it, if they win it all, they'd be like, you know what, worth every dime. I'll take this calorie hap hell. They
instead
don't win
of,
it all.
Instead of F them picks, it's F that salary. Back with the year on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas with you till the top of the hour, taking you until 6 p.m. Caleb Johnson comes your way then. Miami and Atlanta intersecting in a bunch of different ways right now, so I wanted to get the perspective of one of the best down there. That is our buddy Craig Mish. You can read him in the Miami Herald, Sports Grid TV. You can watch him there, and MLB Network as well. Craig, appreciate the time.
Sure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. On the WadeFord.com hotline is Craig Mish. All right, let's start with the Marlins because they are in the middle of a series with the Braves. Explain to me what happened over the last couple of years. They were a playoff team, looked like they had some real pieces. Then injuries took place, and then we just witnessed yet another Marlins fire sale. Why?
Well, you know, Chris, I think that internally when they looked at it, they sort of evaluated the end of the season and decided at least that they just didn't feel like what they saw last year was going to be sustainable. So after doing that deep dive and kind of, you know, looking at how they got to the playoffs and why they got to the playoffs and, you know, how it kind of got to, you know, them to be there by making these trades and, you know, figuring things out halfway through the season, they wanted to try to do things a different way. And part of that is making sure they're hitting on free agents, which they haven't done over the last few years. And the other part is to draft and develop players that are going to play at the big league level. And, you know, inevitably, I mean, dialing it all the way back, they, you know, spoke to Kim Ng, the GM, about that and said, hey, look, we're going to bring in someone who is going to handle some of those things. You're going to be the GM of the team, and we're going to bring in a president to handle the overall operations. And she said no. And so Peter Bendix then was hired, took over, brought in his own people, and Chris decided that, hey, maybe this squad, minus Soler, can compete this year. Let's go ahead and take a look at it and see how we do. Unfortunately, Yuri Perez got hurt very early on, and the results early on in the season just didn't look good. The Tim Anderson signing initially didn't look good. And, you know, when they traded Arias, I think that that was kind of the white flag, so to speak, to say, hey, look, we may have overestimated how good we thought we would be, and now it's time to do things a different way.
Is the franchise in danger of maybe even a relocation or a re-identification of the franchise? Because how many years can you continue to sputter and before something drastic needs to be done, maybe even by the league itself?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I guess it's a fair assessment to be on the outside looking in, thinking that there's a chance of that. But they have a long lease with the city of Miami. The owner has no intention of selling. And on top of it, Chris, you know, Major League Baseball has no issue with the Marlins. I mean, they're letting the Oakland A's tear down to the stubs here, move to Sacramento for a couple of years, and then go to Vegas. So what does that tell you? So no issues at all with what the Marlins are doing. Chris, their payroll was $100 million last year, or close to it. It's just they didn't win. They want to try to do things a different way, and this is the result.
Yeah, when you look at it, there's a couple of names in the lineup you recognize, a Gordon here, a Berger there. What prospects, though, other than those guys that we don't really have familiar faces with, can Braves fans look at and say, that might be somebody that we could see for years to come?
Yeah, I don't know that there's anybody on the Major League team right now outside of the player they just traded for that's been playing, Kyle Stowers, who they got from Baltimore in the trade where they sent Trevor Rogers, the pitcher, over there this past week. But beyond that, a lot of the players are going to be in the minor leagues right now. They acquired another player by the name of Connor Norby, who was on the Orioles, came up, and then went back down. He's working on second base and third base. I think the Braves fans will see him at some point, either later this year or next year. They also traded for De Los Santos, a player that's hit a ton of home runs at the minor league level, from the Arizona Diamondbacks for A.J. Puck. And then they got several players from the Padres who I don't think you'll see initially, but I think you'll see at some point next year. So, you know, for Miami, I'm sure that if you look at it with them getting Sandy Alcantara back and Yuri Perez back and arguably some better performances, I think that the team will be better next year than they are this year because they're on pace to lose over 100 games. But, I don't think the Marlins are delusional in thinking they're going to win like 90 games or anything like that next year. It's probably going to be another a similar year, but probably some improvement would be a guess.
Any chance we see Alcantara moved in the offseason as a high upsell sale?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I was just, I'm just trying to think about what moves this team could make to potentially get them back into a contention. And obviously he's a guy that we know when he's on, he could be one of the best pitchers in baseball. But we don't know, you know, when you come back from a long-term injury, it's always a crapshoot in terms of what type of pitcher you're going to get back. As we're talking with Craig Mish, he is a Miami insider extraordinaire covering baseball and all things Miami sports and nationally on Sports Grid as well. All right, I did want to hit on some things Miami Dolphins related as well, because the Falcons are going down to Miami this week for a practice and then a actual preseason game on Friday. The defense specifically, as you look at the team, I know they have a bunch of guys that are coming off serious injuries. Do you feel like it'll be enough to stop what, for the first time in forever, Craig, looks like a potent Atlanta offense?
I mean, in the preseason, I have no idea. But in the regular season, I think the Dolphins think they're better on defense than they were a year ago. They had a lot of injuries over the course of the defensive line, the defensive backfield. You know, they had a lot of quick strike offensive plays to Tyreek Hill, which, you know, obviously doesn't give the defense a chance to recover. But in the end, I don't know if it's going to be significant enough for them to be, let's say, a 12-13 win team or anything like that. But I do think that their offense is going to carry the load once again like it did last year. Look, I know that what the Falcons did in the offseason was remarkable, adding the quarterback with an S, I guess, right? Adding two quarterbacks.
Yep.
But really, you know, I don't know if you're asking me about this week, but I mean, come on, Chris, NFL preseason, man. Like this.
Well, listen, Craig, you know, here's the thing, my friend. The Falcons Nation, we are looking for anything right now. Anything we can grab our hat onto. So if, you know, if the defense is able to stop Tyreek Hill for a play or two here, stop Waddle a play or two there, if Kirk can get a deep ball to Drake London over the head of one of the corner. I mean, we, after the last 6 years of not making the playoffs, after the collapse in 2016, you know, you get to a point where you're looking for any morsel you can get, and that includes preseason practices.
No, Oh, in the practices. Oh, yeah, no, the practices, I thought you meant the game. Yeah, I mean, listen, the practices could be a different story, but all those names that you mentioned, even on the Atlanta side, I'd be hard-pressed to think that any of them are going to play in any preseason game, especially right out of the gate. They just started practicing a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see with how the practices go. Like, those things are also sort of hard to gauge. But the telling tale for week one of the NFL preseason is obviously to look at the totals, the betting totals. And the Hall of Fame game was, I think, 30. And I think most of the games this week that I looked at, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, are in the very low 30s. So that's a total of 5 touchdowns, which is far from normal in a National Football League game. And I just don't think the way that the NFL has constructed itself right now, they've made the preseason so meaningless, I think they're willing to do away with another game to add Week 18.
No, I think you're right. I think it'll be down to 2 or 1, or maybe they'll just say screw it and have these scrimmages as the entire preseason all together, as we're talking with Craig Mish here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, philosophically speaking, for the Dolphins, they put a ton of money into their quote-unquote Big 3. Do you feel like that could jeopardize the roster long-term in terms of other pieces?
You know, it's a good question, Chris, but I would ask you this. Like, if you ask that question about every other quarterback in the history of the NFL, we always have the answer. The answer is it never does. The National Football League is making so much money. It's a salary cap league. When Brock Osweiler was signed and cut, they said they would never be able to do that, and they did it. When Russell Wilson was a complete bust, they said they would never be able to dump him, and the Broncos, I think, are going to field a team and play 17 games this year. So I just don't buy all that stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, if Tua in 2-3 years isn't what they thought he was, yeah, they'll eat some dead money, and they'll have a new quarterback. It's just very overstated where you hear these teams are in cap trouble. I mean, Chris, they always find a way to have a team and play the season, and you never hear anything about it ever again. I think it's like more fabrication to me than anything else. We can all look at it and worry about it, but during week 4 of an NFL season, are we ever talking about a team's cap trouble? Never.
No, and it's funny because in our own division, the Falcons rival the Saints, they have become the masters at manipulating the cap, because the number comes out every year that the Saints are, you know, $100 million over the cap, and yet they're signing big name free trade. They're getting guys to come in for the defensive end, and they're paying them a $75 million contract with $50 million guaranteed, and you're like, how are they doing this when they're $100 million over the cap? So we've gotten used to seeing that in year in and year out. Now, in terms of Tua, What is the perception from home base there in Miami? What do the fans feel about him, and how do they feel about him getting the money?
Well, look, the fans, or any fan that is a fan of their team, generally speaking, is going to think that they're the best thing since anything, you know? So everybody loves Tua here. And it's like there's like sort of this complex from the Dolphin fan. They get bothered a lot when the national media talks about him in a certain way on some of these shows. I never understood that infatuation either, but I guess that's like a thing. I don't think that the fans are delusional in thinking that he is one of the top five best quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think that's the case, even though he's paid the highest or second or third, whatever that is. But at the same time, I think it's very feasible that fans accept and understand that he's a top-end quarterback in the league, top 15, somewhere along those lines. And, Chris, that's good enough in this day and age of the NFL. There are not 30 good quarterbacks in the NFL. I don't think there are 20. And I think Tua is above that mark. And I think the fans get that and accept that. And if he was a free agent, you and I both know that he would make more than $40 million a year, because the team that has the 28th best quarterback is going to go, wow, here's our shot. Just like Tannehill, just like Cousins, we've seen this before. So I think what we've reached is this day and age where it's not as good. It doesn't really matter how good you are as a quarterback. It matters when you're a free agent and the opportunity presents itself. And Tua's situation in a year or two presented itself in a way that some team would have, without a doubt, pulled the trigger on him to make him one of the highest or the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. Dolphins had to get ahead of that.
All right, before I let you go, I think most people, an average sports fan, would say that the AFC East is a two-horse race between the Dolphins and the Jets, with the Bills being a huge wild card who could potentially win the division or finish third or fourth, and then the Patriots are in rebuild mode. How do you view the AFC East? Where do you put the Dolphins?
So I did a show this morning on my network on SportsGrid, and maybe, Chris, you'd be surprised to know that the Jets and Bills are pretty much neck-and-neck favorites to win the division.
Hmm.
Would that surprise you to hear?
No, I mean, it surprises me too.
But a lot of people feel that with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback and the defense, which is better than any other team in the division, even New England, has a chance to carry them there. Now, I don't see it that way. I think Rodgers goes, on a team that won seven games and makes them a 9-win team, maybe. So I personally don't see it, but the odds makers seem to, and I never want to discount that. So I think that the Bills will take a little bit of a step back unless they're able to acquire a receiver at some point. So maybe this is the kind of division that's a little mixed up at the halfway point of the season. One team makes a trade and gets somebody. But other than that, I think it comes right down to the end. I think there's a good chance two teams make the playoffs, but I don't see three.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I just would have thought those two would have been the Dolphins and the Jets, not the Bills or any way, shape, or form. All right, appreciate the time as always, Craig. Make sure you check him out, as he just mentioned, SportsGrid, MLB Network, and Miami Herald as well. Appreciate the time.
Sure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Craig Mish there giving us the dip and the dish on all things Miami and Atlanta, with the Marlins playing the Braves, with the Falcons going down to Miami for practices this week. And then, of course, we got the news today that Tyreek Hill got his new deal. I don't know, man. I know Craig said that it's NBD, nothing to see here in terms of investing that much money in two wide receivers and a quarterback. It's a lot of cash. That's a lot of salary cap spot, man.
It's the bottom line to me is this. They got to be the Rams. They got to win it all. If they win it all, they'd be like, you know what, worth every dime. I'll take this salary cap. Hell, they
don't win it all. Instead of F them picks, it's F that salary cap. It's going to be. All right, when we get back, we're going to wrap this puppy up. We'll go over everything that happened in the day. We'll see what Caleb Johnson has cooking. Don't go anywhere. Chris Thomas bringing you home on a Saturday afternoon. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're going to chat with our buddy Caleb Johnson here in just a second to see what he has cooking for his program today. He'll be coming up as soon as I get off the air at 6 o'clock. Got the Olympics cooking today. Braves play tonight. It's a lot going on. They talk about the dog days of summer. Not so much. Falcons had their practice last night at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and we got a report from Joe Patrick. There's just a lot going on right now and a lot to sink our teeth into. Tomorrow, I will be on with you filling in for the vacationing John Fricky at 10 o'clock till 1, and we're going to talk about the Braves. We didn't talk a lot about the Braves today because I wanted to talk some Falcons today off the heels of the practice, and then we'll have a big wide-ranging Braves conversation tomorrow because they are in a very interesting spot right now. If they continue to beat up on the lowly Marlins, as we just discussed with our buddy Craig Mish, they're going to put themselves in a position to be right there. I mean, you start looking at their win totals now. I mean, they are close to the top because Philly keeps falling. Dodgers are struggling right now. And the Braves are right there in the mix. So when you look at what's going on, you got to be pretty damn happy. And you absolutely should be because the way that the team is starting to turn this thing around is pretty amazing. Because E made a great point earlier in the show asking me if I would have thought a month ago the Braves would be sitting where they are right now. The answer is abso-positively not. Because the pitching was awful outside of Sale and Lopez. The bats were ice cold. Riley and Olsen especially lost. And now you look at what's happening right now. Arcia's playing on fire. His hair's on fire right now. Olsen's hit a bunch of home runs in a row. Riley's getting back in the mix. And how about Spencer Schwellenbach? Got to give a little bit of a hat tip to him. He's had a couple of really good starts of late where he's had double-digit strikeouts, and he's coming on. So tomorrow we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the trade deadline and what happened and what didn't happen and what could potentially be the Achilles heel for the Braves as they hit the home stretch, or maybe guys like a couple of people I just named could step in and fill the void. So that's what's coming up on tomorrow's show. Obviously, today we talked a lot about the Falcons and where they're at in terms of making their way through the preseason. They obviously have the scrimmage this week with the Dolphins for a couple of days, and then they're going to formally have a preseason game. And it was funny. If you missed the interview with Craig, he was like, well, I don't really see, you know, what you're going to glean out of the preseason game because I don't think anybody's going to play. And he didn't understand that I was actually talking about the scrimmage, not the preseason game. So that was funny because right now in the NFL, the business model that they've moved to is you actually get, like, real live reps with your ones in these they call them – what do they eat? Controlled scrimmages, I believe they're called. Air quotes, controlled scrimmages, where you're live, but like if the coach sees something he doesn't like, they stop the play. They do it over again. They make sure the quarterbacks stay upright. And then in the preseason game, it'll be Michael Penix Jr., Taylor Heinicke. It'll be your backup tackles. Storm Norton will be in there. It'll be Fitzpatrick at tight end. It'll be, you know, Kadarrell Hodge at wide receiver. So you're not really going to glean a lot from – Craig was right about that. You're not really going to glean a lot from the actual game that's on Friday, but you will be able to tell what's going on with the practices that are coming up in the middle of the week. We won't be there physically, and I'm glad because I would not want to stand on the sideline in Miami right now for 2 hours and roast and, you know, sweat through my shirt, which – if you listen to Abe's show earlier, that's a problem that's going on right now. He is a moist individual.
And you wouldn't need your umbrella there. I mean, I think they have a covered facility, but as soon as you got outside of the facility, because the rain's coming to South Florida.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be like an actual swamp. Like, it's going to be – no, like, I would say you couldn't pay me to go there, but that's not true because I do have a price and it's not very large. So I definitely would go there if they said, hey, Dukes and Bell, go down to Miami and cover the practices. But I'm going to be glad to be here in the nice air-conditioned Kia studio. And with that, let's welcome in our buddy Caleb Johnson. Caleb, I know you got a bunch of stuff going on. You said you heard our segment where we were talking about college quarterbacks with that yes. dumb ESPN list. What stuck out to you the most about what you heard?
They get us every time, man. Every time. Because we know we're part of the game. We know what we're doing here. We're putting together a list in order to get clicks, in order to get conversation, in order to get on shows like this so we can get really frustrated and up in arms But we also, I think, along the way, learn people's standards. Because, Eric, I was learning about very high specific standards for quarterback play, which I don't think, at least in my opinion, you can do in college. Because I think you could very much have a legendary college career that is a single year, where in the NFL, we're not putting you in the Hall of Fame for a single year in the NFL. But that's because you have so much longer to be able to play, and in college, limited amount of time. A guy like Cam, like, there is no one better who's ever played the quarterback position in college to me than Cam Newton. I was also born in 1994, so my, you know, the amount of quarterback play that I've seen with my own physical two eyes has been more limited than a lot of people. But it's just like his physical stature, what he was able to do, the fact that no one on that offense for Auburn in 2010 made it to the league, just that is my standard of things. Michael
Dyer had a cup of coffee in the NFL. Thank you very much. A cup of coffee.
Did he actually make a roster? Like, he was on the roster, not in training camp, because that's the big conversation that's always been around Auburn, is that no one from that offense ever made it to the league. And, you know, I mean, if it's one, okay, that's a
and I want to say the tight end probably got a few reps in the NFL.
Michael Dyer has no information available on ESPN NFL stats.
Yeah, so he might have, like, gone to camp with a team. But that
the
was
Raiders.
Like, yeah, but none of those guys actually made it in the league. Like, they were no established players. And that is where I discount a guy like Joe Burrow, is I'm like, that man was just playing with legends around him.
But he also put up the numbers.
He did. And that's why you can't discount him, at least in my opinion. You can't discount him too far. But to me, that puts you down a peg or two.
Nah,
he's
my number one.
I understand. Like, I get why you would do that. It is just, for me, I look at a guy and I go, all right, you're playing with a Hall of Fame wide receiver. Like, that means your job was a little bit easier, and some really established NFL players just around him on both sides of the ball as well. So that's part of it is, and I mean, the most egregious, because they knew what they were doing, was putting Baker number one. He's not top five. Would I put him top 20? Maybe. Like, I just don't take his college career seriously at all. And maybe that's a little bit of, you know, my bulldog showing my
no, he
homerism.
Was, no, he was great, but is he the best? No way.
No, absolutely not.
I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah.
All right. Olympics. Where do you – are you closer to me, casual to very casual, or Abe obsessive compulsive?
I'm somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
Where, like, I have always enjoyed the Olympics – not for the, like, I need to watch every single individual thing and track everything and I know everything about everything. It is just the fact of, like, these are more regular people than the professional athletes or the college athletes that I'm used to working with. And so they always have such interesting stories, and it makes rooting for them that much more fun and enjoyable. And it's also a time that I go, like, yeah, I don't remember all of the rules to fencing, but I learned them very quickly, and then I become all of a sudden an expert in a matter of a couple of days, and I care, you know, direly about who is going to win certain things. So that's the fun part. Like, with the Winter Olympics as well, like, that's when you jump into loving curling for a couple of weeks and skiing and all of those sorts of things. So it's a fun thing for me. I also just, like, because it was in Atlanta and that did so much for this city, I have always had a fondness for the 96 Olympics, and I have a bunch of, like, Olympic gear and that sort of thing. But I think what Peacock has done has been, and I talked about this last week, incredible. The fact that I can keep up with the Olympics without having to tune in at 7 o'clock in the evening and get the updates from throughout the day, or I don't have to, like, watch every single event that the Gold Zone channel kind of pops you in and out and keeps you up to date with everything. It's been so good. And part of my show tonight that I'm going to spend some time on is Olympic greatness and where your standards are at. Because I have found myself realizing that it's gold or nothing when it comes to the U.S. Like, when it comes to anything, it's gold or nothing. And I did not realize I had that high standards until I've seen some underperformances underperforming participants for the U.S.
I think swimming can be highlighted in that category.
Big time. Yeah. Big time.
Track and field now because of what happened today with some of the results. But again, I only know that because the TVs are on in here. I wouldn't be tracking that stuff if I was at home right now.
You don't just like you haven't been just throwing Peacock on and letting it go?
I really haven't.
Huh. All right.
All of my and ironically enough, I've probably watched more than a lot of people because I'm here every day.
Sure.
And the TVs are on for 5 hours a day, so I've just seen it a lot.
Yeah.
And it's when we're at Hooters, it's just on. So I've seen it a lot. The only events I've watched start to finish are the men's basketball.
Yeah.
That's it. I just don't like. I enjoy it, but it just isn't appointment viewing to me. Like, I saw Simone Biles highlights on Twitter. Like, I saw Sha'Carri Richardson highlights on Twitter. That's where I'm consuming a lot of my Olympic information. So
yeah, but that's also like it's there. Like, that is it's an easy place to go and get that stuff rather than having to watch each individual thing. And like I said, you know, I mean, I don't have notes for everything. It is just I just enjoy this because it is more of just like regular everyday people. Like, we have an Olympic athlete. I can't remember what event she's in, but it's some sort of track and field, who took to Twitter yesterday and was like, hey, like, my university didn't come up with the money that I was supposed to have to cover my rent. And so Flavor Flav came out of nowhere and was like, I got you.
Ha.
You know, so like it's just that kind of stuff that you the Steven guy with men's gymnastics.
Yeah, Captain Superman, Clark Kent.
Yeah, like he's a nerd. Like, he looks straight up like a nerd, more like me than LeBron James does. And he's out there killing it, and everyone's getting excited about it. So I think it just kind of brings out all of that, the patriotism, all of the, you know, all of that sort of fun stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I'm more passive about it. All right, okay. That'll do it for this edition of The Other Side of the Glass. Caleb Johnson's got you coming up in 5 minutes from right now. Thanks to E. Thanks to all my guests. Thanks to everyone who participated. I'm back with you at 10 a.m. tomorrow for a special Sunday edition of The Other Side of the Glass. Yeah, Turtles working overtime this week, baby. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.